Good evening, everyone, and I'd like to start this now that we have some of those that have arrived after some traffic issues out there. This is an informational hearing that will allow daycare providers, advocacy groups, and administration officials to testify for or against unionization of in-home child care providers. Two committees are here tonight, the Committee on State Government, Innovation, and Veterans, and Senator Hand's Committee on Health and Human Services. In this room, I would ask that we uphold the decorum that happens when Senate committees are in session. No clapping, no laughing, no loud outburst. If there are, we will ask you to leave. Please take your hats off inside the People's House, if you have them on. And we will hold this meeting as we have with utmost respect for all parties involved. I think I've let the ground rules out. I want to welcome all the committee members that were able to join us here. If we do have any legislators that are in the crowd, would like to join us at the table, please feel free to do so and participate as you so desire. We want the input, and if you have questions, feel free to ask them. We have certain items on the agenda we are going to go through. I believe agendas have been handed out. I'll run them through quickly. Licensing requirements for in-home daycare providers, followed by testimony in support of unionization. Testimony in opposition of unionization, and discussion on the gubernatorial authority to call a secret ballot election. So those are the topics we are going to go through. We are looking at holding testimony to 30 to a maximum of 45 minutes, so we would like to, per side, and we would like to have you hold your comments to 2 to 3 minutes at the maximum. So before we get started, and before I turn the microphone over to Senator Hand, I want to make all citizens aware of some developments that, for me, are somewhat discouraging. We received notice that from the governor's chief of staff, communicated to the committee that Governor Dayton has asked the Bureau of Mediation Services Commissioner Tilson not to communicate anything at this hearing, and that is unfortunate. It's almost deja vu from the budget cycle that we went through when the governor refused to let his commissioners testify, to the point at one point I had asked about subpoena powers. I don't know what this governor is trying to hide, but it's discouraging that we have so many people here tonight, so many people that want to weigh in on this issue, which we, the legislature, believe is a big issue. It not only affects 11,000-plus daycare providers, but it affects the families that work with those daycare providers. And for our governor not to have representation here, or for that matter, being asked 3 different times by myself publicly, and through a letter that Senator Hand and I sent to him, inviting him here to hear the testimony so that he could use all of the knowledge that we are going to hear here tonight. Because all of you are very knowledgeable, and you have reasons for being here. For him not to take time is very discouraging. With that, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to welcome everybody here to the hearing, those in the members of the public as well as other legislators. I do want to, for a moment, just recognize for the people here in the Senate, members of the Senate, we do have a member of the other body, Representative Kirk Stensrud, who is here joining us at the table. I just want to point that out in case people didn't know who that young man was over at the end of the table, but he is from the House and is interested in this issue as well. I second Chairman Perry's comments about the governor's refusal to authorize anybody from the administration to come here this evening to help us learn about this issue. And I want to just point out that this was an issue that was not raised by me or Chairman Perry or members of the legislature, but this is a result of a press conference that the governor had 10 days ago where he announced that he was, through executive order, going to bring about unionization of private daycare workers in the state. I don't know what prompted that. We don't know what authority he is claiming to do that. We thought that given the response that I got, and I think other members of the legislature got as well from emails of constituents and others around the state raising questions and concerns about this, that it seemed appropriate and timely to have some discussion about it. And it is a little concerning to me that the governor is taking the position that he is of characterizing this hearing as foolishness or a waste of time or a waste of money. And it seems to me that if it was important enough to have a press conference on, it's important enough for us as a legislature to also find out what it is that he is attempting or wishing to do. So we are disappointed. We are going to proceed, and we have asked our members of council to be here to, we hope, answer some of the questions that we have, and we will try to explore those as best we can. But we're glad you're here. We will try to be on time. We got a little bit started late, but I think we're going to try to limit this to at least 2 hours, no more than that. And I'll turn it over to Chairman Perry.
Thank you, Chairman Hand. Let's start out with licensing requirements for in-home daycare providers. We have Joan White from Council to give us some information on that. Ms. White.
Mr. Chair and members, generally, family child care is licensed by the Department of Human Services. There's applicable rules and statutes. The rules are under Chapter 9500. And the statutes are under Chapter 119B, 245A, and 245C. And these address the licensing of the child care homes, including inspections of those homes, the licensing process, which includes background studies, negative licensing actions when a license holder fails to comply with the standards in statute and rule, caregiver qualifications, a license capacity, including child-adult ratios, child care provider training, which includes CPR, first aid, and child growth and development, to name a few, the physical environment of the home, and also general nutrition guidelines. The counties conduct background studies and the inspections, and the child care assistance program rates are set in statute in 119B and cannot change without action by the legislature. And the Child Care Assistance Program provides subsidies for families on the Minnesota Family Investment Program and the Basic Sliding Fee Program.
Thank you, Ms. White. Members have any questions for Ms. White before we move on? Thank you. Let's move on to our testimony in support of unionization. What I'm planning on doing is calling two people up at a time. And as one finishes, if there are no questions for that, I'll call the next one up so we always have two at the table so we can move through this informational hearing. The first two testifiers, Lisa Thompson from family child care provider, and Carolyn Collins, also a family child care provider. If those two would come up to the testifying table, please. I'd like to also let folks know that Representative Mary Franson has joined us for the evening as well.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Goodwin.
Just a quick question. I was wondering if we were going to have Anita Newman talk to us about the House or Senate research issues here, because there are, you know, I mean, I'm just wondering if there's some questions that I have on her explanation of whether or not they fall under the antitrust laws and the National Labor Relations Act and things like that. So,
Senator, we did try to contact Ms. Newman, and she is unavailable. However, Senate counsel, when we get to that point, will try to answer those questions for us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Let us welcome to our informational hearing. Let's start out with Ms. Thompson. Please state your name for the record, and then you may proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chair. My name is Lisa Thompson, members of the committee. I'm a family child care provider in St. Paul. And over my past 17 years as a licensed family child care provider, I have worked with providers within the current system that already exists as a family child care association leader, as an advocate to find solutions for the issues and challenges that myself and my fellow child care providers have struggled with. And there have been many successes, but it seems that the challenges are coming faster than the solutions. Family child care providers need support for this invisible, undervalued, and often misunderstood, but very important work that we do. We need to have united representation that's different, but and in addition to what is currently available to us. But we deserve to be empowered, and we deserve to be supported. This movement has not happened in a vacuum. It has grown in the direct response to the needs of the industry and the people who work in it. We as child care providers approach unions to help support us in this effort. Many of the providers who are opposing this effort to be allowed to form a union mistakenly are believing that if they join together as a union, that they are somehow giving up control over their business. This is false. Nothing could be further from the truth. This is about fighting for our rights to retain more of our personal control over our livelihoods by standing together. We will not be someone else's employee. Many of the providers who are opposing this are mistakenly believing that they will have more restrictions on how they run their business and how we take care of children by someone called the union. This is false. We are already heavily regulated industry. That's why we need to join together. We need to stand up together to fight for what's best for children in our care and to be recognized as the professional experts in the work that we do. Many people mistakenly believe that they are or will be forced to join something they do not want to join. That also is false. Union membership is voluntary. Together, we can work on solutions. Many people also mistakenly believe that they're going to somehow be crushed by imposing costs. This has been huge in the media. And the answer to that is absolutely not. We're already crushed by costs. That's why we need to join together. We are crushed by the costs of living that have gone up. If we don't pass those costs on an arbitrary basis. Providers decide together what we can do, what our dues will be, and how much we can afford to do. That's where the vote comes in. That's where providers will decide what we do. That's what a democracy is. That's what a union is. Many people mistakenly believe that the system that they find is working so well right now for them personally is the same experience that many of their other peers around the state are also experiencing. And unfortunately, the answer to that is no. As well. There are far too many great child care providers who are not experiencing the luxury to freely do the work that they are so passionate about. And I, for one, am not willing to wait until I need help to ask to join a union. I know I'm here tonight with other child care providers who do grasp how a union of this unique group of self-employed people can work. And I have been overwhelmed by the number of my peers who believe, like I do, that we deserve this. Organizing any kind of union is about identifying the issues and working together for solutions, not finding somebody else's solutions and trying to solve our problems with them. We are a different kind of industry, a different kind of business. We will require a different kind of union. You cannot put preconceived notions of what a union is on our profession because we are different. There are thousands and thousands of child care providers all over the state, all over this country. And in case you haven't searches on Google, all in other countries as well, that are joining together as a labor union, standing up together for the opportunities to be allowed know, to have the right to have meaningful and lasting impact and input on the controls over our livelihoods, to have consistent and meaningful protection from unfair treatment as we perform our work, and the power to collectively find solutions to this vital industry that right now so many working families find financially burdensome, while at the same time continues to keep the people who do the work on the lowest end of the pay scale. Now, while I welcome this evening the opportunity to come and tell our elected officials about family child care, I cannot hide that I am angry and frustrated that there are some elected officials who are twisting our movement and using it as a platform to further political agendas and the media's fear-mongering reports to entice the public to watch their news programs, building up fears of rising costs to parents. We will not be marginalized anymore. I expect my Minnesota elected officials to recognize our rights to stand up for ourselves. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Thompson. Questions? Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Thompson, thank you for your testimony. I wanted to have some clarification on a couple of comments you made. You said that no one would be compelled to be a member of the union. Would they be compelled to pay dues?
Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, only members will pay membership dues.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Thompson, Minnesota is not what is called a right-to-work state, which means that when there are organized representation of employees, people who work in those companies are required to at least pay what is called a fair share. Would that be the same circumstance in this case as well?
Ms. Thompson, you have three Democrats.
Mr. Chair, we have not yet been recognized as a union. So we do not have a contract. We do not have a system. We do not have the infrastructure and have not joined together to make those kind of decisions.
And Senator, Mr. Chairman, and I understand that hasn't happened, but I guess I was trying to get your opinion about whether that was the intention. I'm not aware of other organizing efforts that aren't organizing within a company or some organization. As I understand it, we're talking about hundreds or thousands of independent people, and I'm not sure who the employer would be. As far as I understand the law, this is not a public employee group. So what is the structure that a union would represent, and how would that be different from, say, an organization of child care providers, which there are, those do exist, and they do come to the Capitol, and they do have organizations that present. So what is unique about the union structure that is different from those things, and how does that play into what your efforts are?
Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, that's the challenge of organizing right now. That is the challenge, is creating what we need.
And, Mr. Chairman, and that's what I'm trying to understand, is what is the reason to do this? If people are free right now to join an organization, to collectively bring their voice to the legislature as part of a business organization or an interest group, advocacy group, that happens today. What is the difference between that and what the union effort is trying to do? And again, I'm interested in how that structure is to be effective when we're not talking about a business or a company or a single group of employees. How does that work?
Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, that is our challenge of creating an organization that's going to effectively, we've identified the problems as child care providers. We've identified our problems. Now our challenge is to figure out how to solve them. We do need to think outside the box of a traditional employer union that most people think of, because we don't have that structure. But this is not uncharted territory.
Senator Hand.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. One other question, and do you have I don't know if you can answer this question or not, or if you, there's been reports that the unions have asked the governor to initiate this effort through a executive order. Is that your hope and understanding that would happen?
Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I can only speak for myself. I'm a child care provider, and I have not personally asked him to sign an executive order. I would defer to the lead organizer on the campaign.
That person got testified.
We'll see. Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Thompson, I got to tell you, I was interested in coming tonight because I don't really even understand the circumstance of daycare providers unionizing. If you look at the purpose of a union, it was historically for groups of employees who felt that they didn't have an effective way to deal with employers to get what they consider to be a fair share of profits. And it was directed at an employer that is a business entity. I don't even understand how the union model fits this. I truly don't. Could you explain that to me?
Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, that is one of many models of union representation. That is the one most people think of, and it is the most common one. But it is not the only one. I mean, if we really think about the concept of a union and a model of a union, our country is a union.
Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Thompson, I hear the passion, and you've admitted yourself. You're angry and frustrated, and yet it seems to me you're a self-employed person. You set the rates of the people who come to leave their children with you. You provide them a contract, I assume, that lays out the terms of how that relationship works. You can compete on price. You can compete on hours. You can compete on the quality of your facility. Who's the oppressor?
Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, our frustrations are with the on the regulatory level, the control that is over us, our contract with parents, and our policies with parents are between us and our parents. And yes, we have complete control over it. That's where we are, the independent business person. But on the other side of that, we are a heavily regulated industry. And we're in our own home. We're different than any other business. The challenge for us as child care providers is to recognize that we are not just self-employed people, as you described an example of, or, you know, hypothetically, but we are also no one's employee. But we are controlled by heavily regulated the state law, the county imposing the laws, and different federal programs. There's a number of things. It's not necessarily an oppressor, but it's having impact and power.
So the government's the oppressor.
In many cases.
What? Well, on that, I suspect
Senator
we agree.
All right. Senator Benson, Nienau, and then Goodwin. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Thompson. Senator Thompson did bring forward many of my questions. With regard to the unfair treatment with regulation, there are already many advocacy groups. And as a member of the Health and Human Services Committee, I've heard from many advocacy groups who deal with home-based licensed child care providers. And when I brought a bill forward that interfered with their business and would have imposed more regulatory burden, they came and they talked to me. And so I think what you're doing is redundant to a system that already exists, providing another level of complication to the life of someone who is very, very busy in their home child care. They don't need more people telling them what to do and how to think. They're free to choose to act on something as the system exists now. And there are plenty of people down here who listen. And so I'm going to move on to my next question. You mentioned inordinate fear of rising costs. Now, I presume at some point you're going to ask the members to pay dues. Will those dues come out of the provider's pocket, or an increase in cost to the parents. And I'd like you to be clear, because there's no magic box money comes out of. Those are really the only two places that money can come from.
Excuse me. You know, Senator Benson, those are good questions. But you know, I'm beginning to believe you're here as a daycare provider, or are you here as being a paid employee of the unions?
Mr. Chair, I am a child care provider. I am not a paid employee of the union.
All right. Do we have the organizer here?
And Adrian Curran.
I think these questions we need to ask the organizer. Mm-hmm. And Ms. Thompson, you've been very patient with us. But it just dawned on me that you'd made the comment that the organizer was here. So, let me do this. I know we have a lot of witnesses, but I have Senator Nienau, Goodwin, and Representative Franson. Are your three questions specifically dealing with what we've been getting at here right now and need to be addressed to the organizer, or can they are? Okay. I'm going to allow them, if the organizer would state your name so that they know who they're talking to.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Adrian Kern. I'm an organizer with AFSCME Council 5.
Ms. Kern. All right, thank you. You heard Senator Benson's questions. Can you articulate an answer, or would you like to have her re-ask those questions?
Re-ask your question, please.
Senator Benson.
I'll default to the last question, as the first one was really more of a statement, and I apologize, Mr. Chair. Ms. Kern, the fear of rising costs is something that has come up in the media, and we were told that it's not really a valid fear. But at some point, dues will be paid if there is an organization. And I'd like to know where those dues will come from. Will they come from the parents who pay for the child care, or will they come from the provider who runs the child care in their home?
Ms. Kern?
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
I'm new at this.
I'm not going to interrupt you again, but the reason that I always start your statement with your name is for the record, so that the tape understands who it is that's speaking, because sometimes the tape doesn't pick it all up right, so we want to make sure that when this is listened to or watched after the fact, they understand who is speaking. So
thank
go
you.
Ahead, Ms. Kern.
Okay. Parents will not pay union dues. Members of the union pay union dues.
So, Mr. Chair.
Senator Benson.
That is, the provider will pay the dues. And we heard about the rising cost of living and how it's already very hard in this industry to make ends meet. And so how is adding union dues to the cost structure of a home-based daycare going to reduce the cost to the parents or provide more stable income to the home care provider?
Ms. Curran?
Mr. Chairman, I understand, yes, the cost of living is going up, but there is going to be no dues collected or implemented for any provider, as in any other contract with any other union, until the providers have negotiated a contract. So that cost will not be implemented, and people typically do not have a contract where they don't vote for a contract where they see an increase in their wages, benefits, working conditions, or whatever that would at least cover that cost, if not more.
Okay. And
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Kern. So what you're saying is we have to do the organization and then we'll find out how much it's going to cost?
Ms. Kern.
Yes, ma'am.
So, Ms. Kern, maybe you could help me with this. I believe I just read something here in the last few days because Wisconsin, our neighboring state, has unionized daycare. Is it true that they spend or the union member pays $300+ a year to be a member?
In Wisconsin?
In Wisconsin.
I have no idea what they pay in Wisconsin.
All right. Thank you. Senator Nienau was next.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was for Ms. Thompson. I'm not going to quote you, but you had made a, a statement to the effect something like you expect your elected representatives to allow for or recognize the need for a union or something to that end. And my question was, in the current environment, without any kind of legislative activity or without the governor getting involved, to your knowledge anyway, is there a mechanism that you're able to pursue today that would allow for unionization of people in your industry?
Ms. Thompson.
Mr. Chair, I am not a legal expert on labor law. No, I do not know.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am, as most people know, that Normie is a very strong advocate of unions, but I'm having some trouble with this one, too, to be totally honest. The majority of my constituents that have contacted me have been opposed. In fact, I haven't received a single note from my constituents that they support this effort, and there's a lot of daycare providers in the district that are independently employed. So I have some questions that I hope the organizer can answer for me here. How many states have unionized daycare providers at this point?
Ms. Kern.
Mr. Chairman, 14.
14.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm on a little patience here. I have a couple of questions. And I remember Ms. Thompson here saying that union membership is voluntary. I've worked for a union and been a legislative liaison for them. And I know that our members that decided not to be members of the union still paid fair share. And I know most public employees, in fact, all of the public employees, as far as I know, in the state of Minnesota, pay fair share if they don't. So do you know how many of those states, the organization that's gone in those states where people that decide not to join the union still have to pay fair share?
Ms. Kern?
Mr. Chairman, I do not.
Okay. And then... okay, thank you. My other question, another question is, and I actually talked to the governor's office about this. None of the unions called me, but I was concerned because of all the notes and calls I was getting on this issue from people in my district. So what is it exactly that the union expects Governor Dayton to do? I just am not familiar with all my union organizing and other things I've done in my life. I'm not familiar with any circumstance where the governor has been asked to issue an executive order. It's usually a vote by potential members. So this is something brand new to me. And I understand that governors have done it in other states. But in Minnesota, to my knowledge, the governor has not been asked or expected to issue an executive order to make a union happen. So that would be my question is, what is it that the unions expect Governor Dayton to issue as an executive order?
Ms. Kern.
Mr. Chairman, what the union in this case, we're talking about the child care providers together, would like is the opportunity to sit down with the state of Minnesota and negotiate a contract where they have input on rules, regulations, and their working conditions. All of the rules and laws are put in place by the legislature and the government, and they want to have an opportunity to have input on that.
Okay, that raises another question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Goodwin.
So what you're asking for is for the governor to allow you to sit down with the state and negotiate, but your daycare providers are not state employees. They're independent contractors, for let's just say that. I'm not sure it's defined that way according to this research summary of some of the issues we have here, but wouldn't you have, if you got the union and you got enough people to sign on to the union, wouldn't you then have the ability to based on your union contract, have the ability to sit down with the state or other payees to negotiate with, for example, DHS on child care provider fees or whatever? So I'm not totally understanding still what this executive order is expected to do. I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be nasty here. I'm just trying to get some, really, my own head cleared up about this.
Before you respond, Senator Goodwin, that's exactly why we we asked BMS and the governor's office to show up and help us with this. But Ms. Kern, you can answer.
Those are good questions. Licensed home child care providers do not fall under the BMS rules or the NLRB. It's a unique situation. The governor can grant an executive order allowing them the right to negotiate as a collective bargaining unit. I don't know if he's been asked to do that as yet. I do not know if there will be an election or not. But that is what the providers want, is the right to negotiate and organize as a collective group. So it is hard to wrap your head around it because they do not fall into the traditional labor roles of the BMS and the NLRB. And I think that's where there's a lot of confusion. And I didn't think you were nasty at all. It's new. But like I said, this has been going on across the country. 14 states have organized or are in various stages of organizing. Delaware governor just signed an executive order yesterday granting licensed child care providers the right to negotiate with the state of Delaware on their working conditions, the laws, the regulations, and basically to just have a voice in the process.
Thank you. At this time, I want to ask counsel, Ms. James, is there anything in statute that authorizes BMS to move forward on a vote? No.
BMS's jurisdiction to hold secret ballot elections are spelled out in Chapters 179 for private employer situations and in 179A for public employer situations where the state it has employees. But neither of those jurisdictional authorities would apply here.
All right. Thank you. Members, here's what I want to do. We have a large amount of testifiers. And Ms. Kern, I'm sure there are members up here that are going to have more questions. But I want to get the testimony in. And so what I'm going to ask is that we move through members, the testifiers, and unless you have a specific question to the testifier, I'll allow it. Otherwise, if you have questions for Ms. Kern, can we call you up after we get through the testimony? I'd really appreciate that. But before you go and before we start that, I know Representative Franson was the last one before I started getting. Did you want to wait or do you want to ask a question now? Ask now?
Yes.
Okay, please pull your microphone up close and feel free, and then we'll move on with our testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Thompson, hi, nice to see you again. You mentioned that you are a child care employer provider and you are not an employee of AFSCME, correct?
Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct.
At any time, have you received any funding from AFSCME?
Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, yes, I received last time reimbursement for my expenses while I do work to help organize other child care providers.
And at what was the dollar amount that you received?
Ms. Thompson?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure that the appropriateness of the answer to that question.
I do know that it is public record, Ms. Thompson.
Okay.
So if you'd like to answer, if not, I can answer for you.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Franzen, I didn't bring my 2010 income tax return with me.
Okay, that's fine. I'm looking at the Department of Labor here, and I see it was $24,000.
Please. Remember the decorum for me, please. This is a Senate hearing room, and thank you. Representative Franzen, any further follow-up?
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Thompson, for your testimony. Let's move on to Ms. Collins. And would Ms. Clarissa Johnston, when Ms. Thompson leaves, you may come up and take her place. Ms. Collins.
Good afternoon. My name is Carolyn Collins, and I am a licensed family child care provider in St. Paul. I am here tonight to tell you and this committee why I would like to have a union recognized. What we want is a unified voice in the decision-making policies which directly affect family child care profession on state and local levels. We also want to build public and political awareness to recognize our profession as an essential component of the early childhood care and education system. Why do we need a union? To effectively represent family child care providers on issues we feel that are a priority to us and to have a primary role in the bargaining process, such as to include affordable health care for child care providers who are not insured under any kind of policy at this time, subsidy reimbursements, and the need for expansion of the subsidy program to serve more low-income families. We need a union to support, to advocate for fairness in grievances and conflicting rule cases. We need a union to help increase the understanding and awareness of the importance of our profession, which is called simply respect. The union will advocate for family child care providers as home-based teachers. We should never be addressed as stay-at-home workers. Many family child care providers have four-year college degrees in early childhood education. Many are accredited and have other credentials which exceed the licensing standards for the state of Minnesota. Why I believe a union can help? A union can help expand resources, services, and support not only family child care providers, but also the families that we also serve. I believe a union can help empower family child care providers to take leadership roles in negotiating and all regulations that concern family child care or subsidy reimbursements designated to as a form of payment to providers. I support the union of family, a union for family child care providers.
Thank you very much, Ms. Collins. Let's move on to Ms. Johnston, and would Mary Albert come forward? You may state your name, Ms. Johnston, and proceed.
Yes. My name is Clarissa Johnston, and I'm here tonight, obviously, to advocate for family child care providers' right to unionize. First, I'd like to thank you for bringing us together to discuss this important topic. I want to say I've had some surprises this week. I was surprised with the research that I read that suggests that the process to change some of these laws or this process, that it can't be tweaked. I mean, I know I'm a layman, but I was surprised at the suggestion to that. I was also surprised with the letter sent to Governor Dayton that suggests that our issues will take away from creating jobs, that you can't multitask and do both. I'm surprised at that. But the most surprising thing for me has been, I need to point out, in the 24 years that I've had my own business as a family child care provider, I have never seen this much attention given to family child care. Seriously, just for the mere fact that the two nouns, family child care and unions, are being combined in the same sentence. Family child care providers, alongside with some wonderful organizations, have worked extremely hard over the years to raise the bar for our profession. And an important aspect of that work is to raise awareness that family child care providers are small business owners and early childhood educators. However, it has become evident in the last month that the image of provider as a babysitter has not moved as far as we had thought. In WCCO's radio interview on September 14th, Representative Downey from Edina proposed the idea that family child care providers do not need to unionize because we are doing this for PEN money. Esme Murphy couldn't see the connection between early childhood education and child care. We feed the system. We feed children to enter the schools. And then just this week, Ms. Representative Franzen had the gall to suggest that we are mindless individuals who will become robots of the union, subjecting children to propaganda. It was in the Star Tribune, ma'am, that I will have children create tax the rich with macaroni. Okay, we are smart, educated, small business owners who support parents' ability to work and make sure children are academically ready for kindergarten. More importantly, we are emotionally connected to these children, which helps establish a secure foundation for them to reach their full potential. And it is because of the union, because we are in the same sentence, we're here tonight with a face, with a voice. This is a defining moment for us. If the union goes away, family child care providers' 15 minutes of fame will fade. As a union, we can raise our pink-collar profession at least to the same level as a blue-collar profession. As a union, we can negotiate a Bill of Rights, which will create a level ground of communication with the Department of Human Services. By stepping out of the current framework that has been set in place for years, in which I believe, with 24 years experience, that it's become stagnant. Collectively, we will move our profession forward with unionizing by creating possibilities that have not been achievable before. It's fluid. And some people feels like it's chaos, but out of chaos can come good things. Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Mr. Johnson, I appreciate your testimony. I'm intrigued by a comment you just made that if the union were to come into effect, that would empower you to negotiate directly with the Department of Human Services, I assume, with respect to things like reimbursement rates and so forth. And those are things that the legislature does in its lawmaking authority. Are you suggesting that the union would replace the legislature in its authority to make laws with the Department of Human Services on things like rates of reimbursement and regulations with respect to conditions in daycare providers?
Ms. Johnston.
Okay. First of all, I need to say I have a hearing issue. So what I think I heard is I may have misspoke when I talk about a Bill of Rights. What I'm talking about is when we can talk with the licensing workers that there can be a level playing field. I have been, and I've seen, intimidation, threats, and I would like some kind of level playing field for communication that I can approach a licensor or go to a class that the licensors are presenting. You know, I am freely showing up to give to hear about policy change and to be told and to hear certain things. I have left feeling threatened and intimidated and scared. So that's the kind of Bill of Rights I'm talking about here that I hope we can create where we can demand respect and how we're talked to.
All right, I'll because Representative Franzen was named, she's asked to speak, so I'll allow one more comment or question before we move on to our next testifier. Representative Franzen.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm so sorry I forgot your name.
It's Clarissa Johnston.
Thanks, Ms. Johnson. I appreciate your comments. Where did you read that I said that you were mindless and that you were going to be robots?
Well, the insinuation. Representative Franzen,
because you said you read it.
Pardon? I didn't quote you. What I was saying, what I read in the Star and Tribune, is okay. What did you say? Do you remember? What
Representative Franson.
Sorry.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, the Star Tribune says Representative Mary Franson was a child care provider for 4 years.
Yes.
She says she worries about propaganda children might be exposed to, including forming the phrase tax the rich and macaroni noodles as a craft project. That was said in jest. Of course, it wasn't reported as such. And so if that hurt your feelings, I do apologize. But, you know, up there, it sounds like you're very passionate about your job, but you also sound very angry. Can you explain?
Ms. Johnston?
Well, I am not angry. I've never done this before.
So Ms. Johnson, would you address your comments this way so that the whole committee can...
I'm not angry. Yes, no. I am passionate. I am saddened with... comments like that, and just that I am going to not meet children at their level and teach early childhood education, that I am going to have them put political comments with macaroni. I am saddened that people think I do this as a hobby. I am saddened that people don't understand what it is I do. When the TV reporter couldn't connect, that or the radio interviewer couldn't connect early childhood education with child care, I am saddened that the advocacy that I have been a part of hasn't made a difference in 24 years. And maybe this is why the union can help me.
Ms. Johnston, yes. Thank you very much. You are truly an angel, as all daycare providers are. I spoke with my wife last night, and I said, I don't know. I had enough hard time with my two children, but how some of you can be as passionate and as loving and as caring when you have 10 and 12, I do admire that. I admire your passion, and I really thank you for coming forth and testifying.
Thank you.
We're going to move on.
Okay.
We are going to move on to Ms. Albert and Ms. Chloe, I believe it is. Would you please come forward and... Ms. Albert?
I'm Chris Clough.
Oh, Ms. Clough?
Yes.
Feel free.
Okay. My name is Christy Clough, and I'm a licensed child care provider, and I have been for 4 years. I'm also a licensed social worker for the state of Minnesota, which I have been for 14 years. I live in Maple Grove, and I support having a union for child care providers. I became interested in the union when I realized that as a business owner, I have no voice in the laws and statutes that regulate child care. I have found inconsistencies in how individual licensors and counties interpret the statutes and rules. The consequences of not meeting the regulations are not consistent and often exceed the situation. The consequences also vary amongst the counties of Minnesota. In attending informational meetings and meeting other providers, I find myself in shock from the stories that I have heard. Providers are afraid to speak up or even appeal the findings of their licensors' home visits for fear of additional retribution of doing so. They fear fines or more severe action against them, such as losing their licenses for standing up for themselves. I've had providers express that they've canceled vacations, have lawyers or family members present during the licensors' visits due to the fear of the consequences from the licensor. We as providers are at the mercy of our licensors, and many of us have good professional licensors, but there are many of us who are not so lucky. I feel that we as providers basically have no rights to protect ourselves. We need the union to allow us to work together to work to change inconsistencies and interpretation of the laws that regulate our businesses. This will allow us to make our priority meeting the needs of those we serve, the children and the families. I want to thank you for this opportunity to put that forward.
Senator Senjum.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and is it Ms. Chloe?
Ms. Chloe.
Ms. Chloe, I'm sorry. I just maybe perhaps a comment more than a question, but I would only hope that the daycare providers look at their legislature, frankly, as an advocacy group. I mean, I think all of us know and value the services of daycare providers within our districts, and we appreciate them. The support they give parents, the support they give kids is just terribly important from many aspects of our lives, economically and otherwise. But it seems like if the system is broken, and I will tell you, at least in any daycare provider in my district can come to me, and if it is broken, we will at tables like this fix it. And I just suggest we need to hear about these issues, and collectively the legislature, I'm sure, will address it. We want good daycare systems in Minnesota, and I think we're your advocates. And if counties are making it difficult or something like that, we just simply need to know about that. And I'm sure there's some way that this legislature can work through those things and smoothen that road for you. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Clow. Are you Ms. Albert?
I'm Ms. Albert.
Okay. Please state your name for the record and then proceed. Ms. O'Boyle can come up to the table. Ms. Clow.
I'm Mary Albert, and I'm here to support to have a union. I've been doing licensed daycare for about 7 years now. And as providers, I can state for myself, we don't have a voice. When it's time to do, when we have state regulations and rules against us, the statutes that we get in the mail of all the rules and statutes, majority of us don't clearly understand the rules. And when we go and call our licensors to talk to them about it, they see a different proceed than we do. And so I'm here tonight to just support that we need to have a voice in the statutes and the lawmaking.
Thank you, Ms. Elmer. We'll call up now Ms. Spainhauer and Ms. O'Boyle.
I'm
please,
here.
Please state your name and proceed.
My name is Sharon O'Boyle. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this is the first time that I've been in the Capitol since I was in 7th or 8th grade. So,
oh, welcome.
I also feel very strongly. And I've done it in a fact and question order, so bear with me. Fact, I am an early childhood educator and have held a pre-kindergarten associate teaching license through the Department of Education, Minnesota Department of Education, since 1983. Fact, I have been training for and actively working in the field of early childhood education since 1970. Fact, the institutions of higher learning I have attended include St. Cloud State College, the University of Minnesota, and the College of St. Catharines. Fact, my work history achievements include center manager, which is a teaching director with the Head Start program, RKK School Age Supervisor, which is a school age supervisor with District 833 in Washington County, toddler, preschool, and school age teacher with both privately owned and chain operated childcare centers, licensed group family childcare in Dakota County from 1976 to 1983, when I moved on into the out of the home, and back into licensed group family licensed childcare in Washington County from 1998 through the present time. I've also been a single foster parent when I was in Dakota County. Fact, I want a union. I want a union to work with me on issues that concern myself and other licensed family childcare providers, including but not limited to licensing rules and regulations, adequate compensation for services provided to families on CCAP, availability of training to be treated as a professional by both county and state representatives, all levels, and employees of both county and state. Fact, the CCAP, which is the Child Care Assistance Program, reimbursement rate has been frozen for over 10 years now. Fact, the minute increase that took place in 2006 was circumvented by the slashing of the registration fee at the same time in 2006. Fact, when the 2.5% cut goes into effect on October 31st, 2011, the base reimbursement rate for a full-time schoolager, that's 50 hours a week, over 35 hours a week, will be reduced from $116.48 per week per child to $113.57 a week per child. Fact, when all of the cuts are implemented from your budget deal, I will lose over $6,000 per year from one family alone. And that's before business expenses. That's over one-third of my business income before business expenses. Fact, I live below the national poverty level as it is due to both the economic meltdown, the clientele I serve, and a cuts-only mentality. Fact, I'm sorry, I didn't want to be too loud, but I want to make sure you can hear me. Fact, when the initial cut goes into effect on October 31st, 2011, I will make $2.27 per hour per schoolager full-time, and that is also before business expenses. Question. Could you provide an individualized educational program? Nutritious meals, pay for heat, electricity, and other child care business expenses on $2.27 per child. Question, how many tax dollars are you getting paid with to hold this short notice meeting, which I actually found out about yesterday, while you were on recess and not due back until January 24th, 2012. Question, what is the total cost to taxpayers to hold this informational meeting? Question, what is the total loss of business income you are causing licensed family child care providers to incur in order to have a voice at this short notice meeting? Question, how much does your per diem equate to on an hourly basis? Question, did you take any cut in pay or benefits in the budget deal?
Ma'am.
Can I finish?
I think you're getting off. We're talking about daycare.
That's what I'm doing.
And I understand that's that. But, Mr. ma'am, Chairman. you're delving, and I'll let you continue.
I want
you to know I believe that you're getting off the path here. But I'm going to be
this
lenient with you.
This is all part of why I want.
I understand.
Excuse me.
But I'll be lenient for a short period
thank
of time
you.
Right now.
Okay, right? Thank you. Fact, I have no income because every penny that comes into my child care business is used to provide a high-quality program for the children in my care. Fact, I haven't put even one penny into any union's pocket since I chose to join the union Child Care Providers Together on April 7th, 2007. I searched them out. Fact, when we are recognized as a union, any amount of dues will be cited by the membership. Fact, I pay dues to belong to other professional organizations. I have no control over what they charge.
fact, I will have control over what I pay to the union, my union, for dues. Okay, you're not going to like the next question, so I better skip it. Question. This is a question that I would like to know your answer to, so if it's inappropriate, please let me know, but don't kick me out. Why weren't the remaining CCAP funds used to help the over 4,000 families? And I know you can't give me an answer right now, I just want to put it out there, that qualify for CCAP. Why weren't they used to put Minnesotans back to work? Fact, the government, Minnesota included, has been bailing out big business for years. Fact, you say you support small business owners. Prove it. Put your funding where your mouth is. Fact, I am a small business owner, a sole proprietor, in a field that is almost exclusively run by women. Question, you might not like this one either. Is this an attack on women in general and licensed family child care providers in particular? Comment, and wouldn't this be considered discrimination? Sure feels like it. Fact, due to the inadequate funding and children being considered a low priority by this legislature, I can't provide even the basic necessities for myself and depend on food shelves and fuel assistance and credit cards to meet even the most basic needs. No way does that give me the ability to expand my business, much less hire anyone else, nor do we qualify for any of those big business bailouts. Fact, to date, the union, AFSCME, and child care providers together has given me a platform to meet with other licensed family child care providers and to share ideas, questions, and concerns on a local and statewide basis. Fact, a union will give me a level playing field in a below market rate field that I'm in. Fact, I have advocated for children in my care and for the families I serve, but there is no one to advocate for me. Fact, by joining together, licensed child care providers can work together on these issues with union representation. We will at last have a voice. Fact, I am proud to be a member of Child Care Providers Together, which is CCPT, since April 7, 2007, just as I am proud to belong to other professional organizations, including, and if you don't know what they are, ask me, MNAYC, MLFCCA, WCLFCCA, and MNSACA. I also provide military child care on a volunteer basis and am on the Search Support Child Care List, which is a volunteer organization state level for National Guard members.
Ms. Boyle?
Yes?
We're at 8.5 minutes just for you alone.
I only have half a page left.
Ms. Boyle, I think we get your message. We understand. I appreciate it. I will let one response, if he so desires, and that's the chair of Health and Human Services, my co-chair, Senator Hand, if he does want to make some response. If not, we'll move on to the next testimony. Are you okay? All right. Thank you, Ms. O'Boyle. And I would ask you to leave your questions, and we'll certainly try to get you a response here in a short order, if you want to do that.
I think I'm – this you mean?
Well, what?
Yeah,
it
should be in the box.
Well, we'll find it,
okay,
and we'll get to you. If Ms. Martini would come to the microphone as Ms. Spainhauer, and I am going to institute at this time. We have been here for 1 hour and 10 minutes, and we still have those opposing to get through a 2-minute time limit. So if you have prepared statements, start working them down to 2 minutes. I will ask my committee administrator to keep us on track with that. Ms. Spainhauer.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and committee members. I appreciate being here tonight. Before I begin to testify, I did want to ask a question, if that's appropriate at this point, about the backup material.
Please.
I'm looking at the child care program information that was given, and I'm concerned because this is center-based child care, and I'm not certain why we're looking at center-based child care regulations. as opposed to Rule 2 family child care?
I think the first page is on home base. That's what we've gotten off the...
Yeah, there's three or four paragraphs, right. And then the rest of the information is all on child care.
Correct.
Center-based.
It's all from the same webpage.
Yes. Just I was saying that we're more focused on family child care,
sure.
So I was just wondering. But thank you
yes.
for clearing that up, Mr. Chairman. Again, good evening, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Lynn Pittman Spainhauer. I'm a Minnesota native. Excuse me for my cold. I'm very sorry. I will try and be as understandable as possible. I've been a child care provider for 20 years. I'm a single mother of two boys to 20 and 17 years old, and they will soon be entering the United States Navy. And I have been in child care for their entire lives. During this time, I've seen many changes in the child care industry, not all of them good. We've endured cuts and changes to the USDA food program. We've had cuts to our child care assistance subsidies in 2005, and most recently a 2.5% cut after the state shutdown. Child care providers are notoriously underpaid, not to mention that we are very vulnerable to state cuts. We have no legal voice in the many decisions that are being made that affect our daily lives as providers. This is the reason that providers are organizing. There are people here tonight who will tell you that we don't need a union. I am here tonight to tell you that I feel that is absolutely incorrect. Please let me tell you why. With a voice at the state, cuts like the 2.5% decrease to child care assistance that we now get to absorb would possibly not have occurred. If you want to see a parent's rates increase, and I know that is a fear, and that is something that's being said out there, if you cut the subsidy, which you just did, watch how fast providers are going to have to pass on that cost. Not having a union voice is what will increase parents' rates very shortly. As providers, we are asking to have a voice at the table when decisions that affect our industry are discussed. We are the professionals. We know what it is and what it takes to achieve quality care. We need to be at the table. Lastly, I would like to point out that Minnesota Early Learning is receiving 1% of the state budget. How can providers such as myself, who are woefully underpaid, continue to absorb the cost of educating our future generation when we're seeing 1%? This funding level is unacceptable, and we are failing our children and families. The only way we can correct the path we are on, in my opinion, is to unionize and give providers the voice that they need to strengthen their union in the way that they know is appropriate. It's time that Minnesota sincerely looks at this issue, and I truly hope that you will give it the due diligence that it deserves. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Spainhauer. If we could ask Ms. Bourne to come forward as Ms. Martini introduces herself and proceeds.
Mr. Chair and the committee members, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on behalf of a home family child care provider. I am Kelly Martini, a licensed family child care provider, and I've been in child care providing for 13 years. I live in Avon, which is in Stearns County. I am a parent of three wonderful children. I have helped fundraising when they were in preschool to help with my daughter's volleyball team for the Junior Olympics when she was in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. I have a 5th grader right now, a sophomore, and a junior in school. I am an elected official for the Avon Township as a treasurer since 2003, and I am also on the board of Stearns County Association of Townships since 2006. I am also a SEIU First Kids member. Family child care providers are organizing their unions so that we can have a legal voice with the state and have a seat at every table. Providers know firsthand what it takes to deliver quality care. We are committed to making early learning a priority in Minnesota. And by having a legal voice through an executive order, we will ensure that providers are able to advocate for themselves and the children we care for. I take pride in the work I do. It is important to me that all children have some safe, stable, and healthy environment that I work hard to provide for in the kids of my care. Rightfully so, the state regulations home daycare to ensure these protections for children are in place. As a professional, I believe it's important for child care providers to have a seat at the table and address those issues. Coming together as a union brings child care providers to the table and gives us a voice that is critical for the safety and well-being of our children in a way that recognizes the experience and expertise we have to offer. Having a union will mean that all providers will have access to tools that means an accountability to effect advocates ourselves and children we care for. Family child care providers keep Minnesota working and offer a critical service to our communities. It is important that we all work together. Our children are depending on us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's move forward to if Ms. Noble would come forward. We'll hear from Ms. Bourne at this time, if you would like to introduce yourself and proceed.
Sharon Bourne. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak.
Mr. Chair, could
yes.
we ask the testifier to move the microphone up? Thank you.
There you go. Thank you very much.
Well, my name is Sharon Bourne. Is that better?
Thank you, yes.
Okay. And I've been a licensed daycare provider for 12 years. And I'm also a member of the SEIU Kids First. In my work as a child care provider, I am many things. I'm a second mother to the children I serve. I'm a mentor to the parents. I'm a teacher. I'm an advocate. My work supports parents and local businesses as we work to get our economy moving. The parents I serve are working mothers and parents who are looking to find and keep good jobs in our community. Most receive help from the child care assistance program so they can start school or new jobs. And I'd like to say I do make $2.18 an hour, $2.16 an hour with the daycare program. And most of my families are on the program. For the kids I serve, I am their first teacher years before they go to kindergarten. The Waseca schools depend on me to prepare the children by teaching them everything from their ABCs to numbers to colors to respecting others and problem solving on their own. And I can work with them because they know my face and they trust me. I enjoy these children. I enjoy seeing children like Angela's. They grow and learn every day. And as a member of the SEIU Kids First, I'm working with providers to improve the quality of child care and make sure that good providers like myself can keep our doors open. In June, when the government shutdown was being talked about, my parents came to me and they were panicking because they didn't know what they were going to do with their kids and if they were going to lose their jobs if they couldn't go to work. So I assured them that I would do everything in my power to watch their children, to take care of them during the shutdown for as long as I could financially do it. And that's what we did. And with my fellow providers and allies, I participated in legal action to ensure child care assistance was allowed to continue during the shutdown. And we all know we won. With our union, I want to improve funding and reimbursement rates for the child care assistance so parents can go to work and I can afford to stay in business and to support them. And working in our union, we can improve access to trainings and offer incentives for providers to gain higher levels of training to better serve the changing needs of our kids. And in my time as a provider, I have worked with more and more kids with special needs. And providers should have access to continuous and new training on how to work with these special needs kids. You get paid the same amount of money no matter. They have to get ready for school too. And in closing, I'd like to say, as I have in the past, that this is Minnesota, and we don't turn our backs on our kids. And to me, this means helping parents who cannot afford child care, supporting good providers to stay in business so kids see a face they trust, and giving working women like myself a seat at the table with the state to improve our child care. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Angela Noble.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm not a provider. I actually take my children, two boys, a 3- and a 4-year-old, to see Sharon every day, Monday through Friday, while I go to work. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for allowing me to speak briefly to you this evening. Like I said, I have two boys. I just wanted to talk about how quality, affordable child care has benefited my life and the importance of the work of child care providers like Sharon. I just want to let you know how much quality providers like her mean to me and my family. As a mother, I'm constantly juggling the demands of work while raising my boys, who are a few years away from entering kindergarten. In the last year, I've been working hard to look for and find a stable full-time job, which I did, that will help me to raise my family. The economy is really terrible right now, and it's difficult to find jobs, and took countless hours of interviewing, a lot of interviews, and searching to find a stable job. All throughout this process, I have been blessed to have my child care provider, Sharon, who helped raise my boys when they are in her care. The peace of mind that comes when I leave my boys there every morning, knowing that they're safe, that they're in a stable home, that they're learning, is just amazing. It's reassuring, and I couldn't get through the day at work without knowing that. She's never let me down, has been my rock in my boys' lives. They love and they trust Sharon, and they have grown from babies into smart, sweet, wonderful little boys in her care. When one of my boys is having a tough day, she's always there. Or when I'm running late from work, Sharon is there also watching the boys. When the government shutdown threatened child care and my ability to go to work, Sharon was there and assured me that she would work with me to ensure I could go to work and my boys would be cared for, even at her own personal expense. I believe there is no more important work than raising our children, and our state should support providers and listen to them. I support Sharon's efforts to join with other providers by forming a union. She should be valued for the work they do so she can support her family and be listened to when she has ideas about improving child care. I want other parents to be able to have the peace of mind and great care that providers like Sharon provides. Parents like me depend on stable, quality child care, and having a union will give Sharon and other providers like her a strong voice and a seat at the table to ensure that her professional advice or expertise is valued and taken. Thank you.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Noble, thank you for being here. I just had one brief question for you. Do you pay your provider, Ms. Bourne, is it? Anything in addition to what the state reimburses?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Are you here to testify, ma'am?
No, I'm not.
All right. Thank you very much. That ends our testimony as it's signed up here on the support of unionization. We will move forward in testimony in opposition. Jennifer Branshaw will be our first testifier. Is she here? She did submit written testimony, and you will find that online. We have Jackie Harrington. Is she here? Please come forward. And Holly Seville, if you're here, you could join her at the table. And why don't we bring up Becky Swanson at the same time? And we will start with Ms. Harrington, if you would state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah. Good evening. My name is Jackie Harrington. Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm a licensed family child care provider in Rochester, Minnesota, and it has been my privilege to care for many families during the 12 years that I have operated my small business within my home. I'm here tonight to speak about a matter that is so important to me and have been working on for the past 6 years. I feel strongly that licensed family child care providers are independent small business owners, and the effort to unionize our small business is neither legal nor ethical, and it is a duplicity of the current child care associations, support and service organizations, and early childhood advocacy organizations that exists already within Minnesota. As you are learning, the original organizing campaigns here in Minnesota began in 2005 and 2006 and was put on hold when Governor Pawlenty indicated that he would not support this effort. I was active at that time in opposing the effort to unionize family child care and became active again on February 1st of this year when I learned that the unions had reinitiated their door-knocking campaigns for support and were claiming that Governor Dayton had already agreed to sign an executive order. After a conversation with other providers in Minnesota, who I had met through this process in the first go-round, we decided at the very least we would work to make sure Minnesota providers and legislators were aware that this was happening. We set up the website childcareunioninfo.com as a source of information and a collection point for providers who had concerns about the union organization efforts. We all knew we couldn't let Minnesota providers become just another state in which a small percentage of licensed family child care providers determined that all providers would be represented by one of two unions. In researching the votes that took place in other states, it became clear that a small minority of providers determined the election for the entire family child care profession. In Illinois, the Chicago Tribune reported in 2005 that 27% of the providers approved the union representation, and with that vote, nearly 50,000 child care providers were unionized. In Washington State, the Seattle Post-Intelligence reported in 2005 that 33% of providers approved a union representation for 10,000 providers. And in Michigan, Fox Business News reported in 2010, 15% of the providers approved representation for 40,000 child care providers. These examples from other states offer a pattern that is clearly not democracy in action. And as a small business owner, I believe unionization of family child care providers is the wrong direction for our profession and believe a vote should not be even in consideration. However, this decision to proceed is in Governor Dayton's hands. If he decides to proceed with a vote, it must be overseen by a labor board, unlike the other states where unions have been formed outside of labor law, to ensure the process is transparent and allows all 11,000-plus providers in Minnesota the opportunity to vote. In our efforts to reach out and educate providers over the past 8 months, we have heard many stories about union organizers approaching providers during the business day when they were actively caring for children. In many cases, the organizer was not clear that they were representing a union, and providers were misled into thinking that they would receive more information by signing an information card, when in actuality, a signature on these cards represented a vote of support for unionizing family child care. In the testimonial packet that I provided for you, I included the letters that were submitted to the providers that I've been working with through childcareunioninfo.com. From across the state, these providers sent in letters, and they were ones that felt that they were misled into signing the cards and had negative experiences with a union organizer. And it's really important that these stories and experiences are recognized. Lastly, I would like to add that local and state and state child care associations and advocacy organizations have been effectively advocating and lobbying on behalf of families, children, and child care providers for nearly 40 years in Minnesota. Child care providers have an independent and voluntary choice to join these organizations at the local, state, and national level. And as an active local county association member, I've at no point felt that I have not had a voice to bring my concerns forward to the legislature. And in this room, I see my senator over there, and he will attest to the fact that I have called him frequently. So members of the Senate, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you this evening, and I look forward to a resolution and a means to stop this effort to unionize family child care providers who are small business owners into a union.
Thank you, Ms. Harrington.
We'll move on to Ms. Seville. And then if Karen Ephraim would come up and take the empty chair. Ms. Seville, please state your name and proceed.
My name is Holly Sable. It's okay.
Ms. Sable. Right.
You can, it's not my, it's my husband's last name.
So. Okay. And again, I want to remind testifiers, let's try to hold it as close as we can to 3 minutes. Okay.
Good evening, Senators Perry, Han, committee members, and guests. My name is Holly Sable, and I have owned Happy Holly's Child Care, a licensed family child care in St. Michael, for the past 6 years. I am also a trainer for early childhood educators. I am here to urge you to prevent the unionization of family child care providers. I have my dream job, one that I look forward to every day. It's a new adventure, one that I can't imagine being without. We take weekly field trips, have music, gym, early childhood family education programs, and travel taught teachers to enhance our program. I feel blessed to be there for all the memorable moments, from first words to writing their names, lost teeth to preschool graduation. We are their second home, a loving family environment. Hugs and laughter fill our days, and I couldn't imagine it any other way. I'm sure you're envious. I have worked and taught in schools for more than 20 years, but I left a corporate center to open my own business because I wanted to care for children in the way that my education and experience taught me was best. We already have more than adequate regulations to protect children and families in our care, covering every detail about our home, construction, and environment, to the care, activities, and equipment we provide. They are there to protect children and their families. I do not find them overbearing. We do not need another organization looking to influence regulation, as individual providers and organizations have successfully lobbied our legislators and licensing to change child care regulations for everyone's benefit. We are fortunate to already have many local nonprofit organizations working for our unique needs and interests. The Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, Child Care Works, the Minnesota Association for the Education of Young Children, the Minnesota School Age Care Alliance, and our city and county child care associations, all of whom work tirelessly to support, train, and lobby for family child care providers and children. They are improving the quality of child care in Minnesota. As president of the Wright County Family Child Care Association, I represent more than 450 licensed family child care providers. For only $35 a year, we offer free monthly trainings, conferences, networking opportunities, referrals, and mentoring for family child care providers. Volunteers, our members, drive our organization, and they share their suggestions and concerns freely, knowing that we will listen and make changes democratically. Members serve on our board, and they make those decisions. A union will not offer us these same benefits, and only a few members, 10 to 15, may influence 11,000 independent, self-employed family child care providers. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for allowing me the opportunity to speak here tonight.
Thank you very much. Ms. Swanson will be next, and Ms. Gentz can come up and join the others at the table. Ms. Swanson.
Good evening, Senators and invited guests. My name is Becky Swanson, and I have been a child care provider in Dakota County for the last 24 years. Six of those years has been as a center director, the last 18 years as an in-home business. I am a small business. I represent who I am. I choose not to belong to any of the organizations, although I do go to all the trainings, and they are there for me. I have spoke to my licensor many times this week on what our guidelines are and where we stand within licensing. I have a very wonderful open relationship with my licensor. I've called my senator. He also has been very open and honest with me and what I have for questions. I don't feel I need a mediator. In the past 18 years, I've been running a successful in-home family child care. The families come and they interview me as the person is who they want to take care of their children. Not a corporation,
not a union. They interview me. I am the person. I am the child care. I would like to talk to you tonight, and the reason I'm passing out this is I was visited three times by SEIU, and once in 2005, once in 2007, again in 2010. The union came to my door. They chose my busiest time of the day. I did not ask them to come. They knocked on my door at lunchtime. I don't know if you've tried to feed 10 hungry, tired children at the same time. It is chaos, especially if there's someone at your door. When he came to the door, he introduced himself as a kids first. I did not know what a kids first was. And I talked to him a little bit, and he said, well, he was interested in improving child care in the state of Minnesota. I asked him point blank, are you with the union? He said, I am with Kids First. Obviously, he answered me correctly, Kids First is SEIU union. After pressing him as to what Kids First is, he finally admitted he was from the union. I asked him, because he had an accent, where he was from. He said he was here from New York working with SEIU. So we chatted for a little bit longer, and he presented me with what I photocopied and handed you tonight, which is a card. He informed me that it was an informational card so that I, as a child care provider in the state of Minnesota, could get information as to what was going on with child care. He did not inform me that it was a check card, that if I filled out this card and returned it or left it with him, which I was supposed to do, it meant that I wanted to be part of the SEIU union, Kids First. After he left, I thought about it for a while, and I heard about the union through other child care providers. So I decided that I would call the child care providers in Dakota County, along with some other providers, to see what they knew about SEIU child care unions. And I came across a wonderful group who had posted a website, and that website has been referred to tonight. And I will give it to you in a second. But it's childcareprovidersinfo.com. I might not be quite right. I've gone to the website. I've looked for information. They've been very informative. They've been very forthwith. And exactly what they can find is credential and credible materials to be posted. I feel I've been able to give myself a very educated about what is happening in the state of Minnesota, child care, and as they say, versus union. I do not think this is a child care versus union. This is a small business versus union. I am a small business owner. This is not the realm in which I wish to be spending my time. I spent my time today in an apple orchard with 10 children. I should have brought you all a Honeycrisp apple and made a sweetened up the mood tonight. But that's where I want to spend my time. I have families. They interview me as the person they want to take care of their children. They don't interview a union. I have been very fortunate and am very blessed. I have a sub who works for me, and she's been my sub for 15 years. I do not know what will happen if she will be able to sub for me. I have asked questions. The union has not answered. So I guess what I'm asking tonight is, if Governor Dayton does decide to sign an executive order for a vote, what are the who, what's, where's, and why's? Who's going to conduct the vote? What is going to be on that ballot? Where is this vote going to be tallied? How are they going to count these? Is someone who decides they don't send in their ballot considered what kind of vote? There are 11,000 of us in the state of Minnesota, and I guarantee you there are still many child care providers who do not know that this is happening and that this will happen to their small business. This country was based on the backs of small business owners. I prefer to stay that small business owner. I would like to maintain and keep the quality care that I offer the families that are in my care and the children. Let me please go back to work. Let me be the child care provider that loves and nurtures children so I don't have to spend my evenings at the Capitol. I love you all, but this isn't where I want to be. Thank you for listening to me tonight. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Ms. Swanson. And now we're going to move on to Ms. Ephraim, and we'll ask Ms. Falk to come to the table. Ms. Ephraim, please state your name and proceed.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman Perry and Chairman Han. Members of the committee, my name is Karen Ephraim. I am a wife and a mother of three, trained as a pediatrician here as president of Education Liberty Watch. And we share a number of the concerns that have been mentioned by the opponents, and especially if this does go through, what does it mean for those that oppose it? Do they have to join this union? How is that going to affect the care of the children? We also have huge concerns about jurisdictional authority, and I believe it was Ms. James that said that it doesn't appear that the governor has that jurisdictional authority, and we are concerned about the governor proceeding without that authority and going around the legislature, and we are also very concerned about the related decision that he has made already this summer to expand the quality rating system statewide, despite the clear rejection of that system by votes of the legislature, by large votes of the majority, and that is being used to then meet criteria for more federal money and more federal control through the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge Grant. Another big issue for us is concern that the, as has happened in other states, that child care workers and programs that take subsidies are then considered government workers for the purpose of unionization, and given that the state of Minnesota spends or receives about, by my rough estimation and brief review of the Minnesota Management and Budget site, about $240 to $260 million for child care subsidies and development in this state, and that the legislature spent another, or is going to spend another $4 million for the early childhood scholarships in 2013, and is applying for another $50 million of federal grants through the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge, that these subsidies are going to be used to hook in providers that may not otherwise wish to be unionized, who wish to keep their independence, as has been already testified to. So we would ask, that you ask very hard questions about the statutory and jurisdictional authority involved, about the role of subsidies, that you oppose this unionization, and that you also oppose the Race to the Top Early Learning Challenge, and the and that you withdraw and repeal, as Senator Thompson and Representative Franzen have already introduced bills to do, the quality rating system framework.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier will be Ms. Gentz, and we'll ask Ms. Parrish to come forth. Ms. Gentz, please state your name and proceed.
My name is Pat Gentz. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm grateful to be here this evening, and I thank you for that privilege. I've been a licensed family child care provider in Dakota County for 28 years. I've also been an educator and mentor for many family child care providers in my community, and again today, I'm an advocate. During those 28 years, I've seen many changes, most of which have been positive, not only for the field of early childhood education as a whole, but in the family child care profession in particular. One change I would not view as positive is the possibility of union organization for 11,000 licensed family child care professionals, providers who are independent small business owners working in our homes, caring for Minnesota's youngest children. Think about it. What if lawyers, farmers, accountants, doctors, and dentists who are in private practice were suddenly told they had to belong to a union in order to obtain their business license? It makes no sense. When parents begin looking for a caregiver, they talk to friends and family. They look for a personal referral and begin making the connections to find a caregiver that they will ultimately have all through those early and very important years in their child's life. From the very first phone call to the interview and the enrollment process, and through those first weeks in care, we begin building and maintaining a relationship of understanding and honesty and, most importantly, trust, all of which are the foundation for a solid relationship with our families. The union cannot help us with that. Parents are looking for a provider who has similar values, someone they can relate to, someone they can communicate with personally on a day-to-day basis, someone they can truly partner with day by day. A union cannot help us with that. Parents want a child care provider who is well-educated. Providers are able to receive continuing education from a multitude of organizations that are already available to us. I obtained my CDA credential, my national accreditation, and then graduated with a degree in child development in 2009. I did not need the union to help provide any of these professional development opportunities. You need to understand that our occupation is a calling. It means much more to us than warm fuzzies all day, even though we know that warm fuzzies are important too. As child care professionals, it is our desire to provide the absolute best in quality care for Minnesota's children, and a union cannot help us with that. Parents want a caregiver who provides a safe environment where their child will learn and have fun and make new friends. They're going to learn new good manners and what it means to be respectful and what it means to have empathy and compassion for others. As professional child care providers, we model those things on a daily basis. Parents want a family child care provider who will nurture their child's spirit and their emotional growth so that when the time comes for this little one to leave our nest, this child will not only be well prepared to succeed in school, but will be well prepared to succeed in life. A union cannot help us with that. More than anything else, parents want a family child care provider who is going to do one simple but very profound thing, and that is to simply love their child. Every single person in this room knows that you cannot legislate love, and you most certainly cannot unionize love. In closing, I am respectfully asking that you support licensed family child care professionals as independent, self-employed, small business owners who love and care for children. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We will hear now from Ms. Falk, and we'll ask Ms. Cunningham to come to the table. Please state your name.
My name is Heather Falk. Good evening, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thanks so much for giving us this last opportunity. The union keeps talking a place at the table. I kind of feel like I'm here. My place at the table. I oppose the unionization of small business owners as an entire industry. I'm actually very liberal and support unions. My first experience with them was back in 2005 when I heard about an informational meeting they were holding in Duluth. I attended this meeting with a bunch of other providers. I thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to sign up for it. At the meeting, they talked about what the structure of unions are and kind of explained the rundown for us. They also told us that they could get us health care and a pension and workman's comp. When these questions came up, a lot of providers started to ask questions. Who's going to give us this? We're self-employed. And they can't answer that. And then when we get to the dues structure, how much will dues be? Well, we can't determine that until a contract's in place, and we can't do this. And more questions were being asked, and finally we were all asked to leave the meeting because too many good questions were being asked. And they followed us out of the building, and it was very intimidating and very scary to be waiting in the parking lot for the rest of the group had been sitting and listening so I could leave. It piqued my curiosity, though. I had gone there interested, ready to sign up for this, on why these questions couldn't be answered. And they talked about other states, so I started doing research. Through my research, I didn't like what I was seeing from a business standpoint. I run my own business. I set my rates. I contract with my parents. And I understand that if a union comes in, that they're not going to change that. I don't understand what they can actually do for us. I advocate for myself. I have a very good working relationship with my licensor, and my heart does go out to providers who don't. But if we have a question about rule changes, she's there. She answers them. She goes over information with us. It's wonderful, and that is my experience with licensing. Rule two, the rules we follow, nothing in there is extreme or outrageous. Every law that's been in place, from what I understand, is for the protection and safety of children, what's best for children and their families. We do get notice of law changes. I'm a member of MLFCCA, and they do talk about upcoming legislative changes. I feel like we have some input through that association and a representative that attends these meetings and brings it back to our county so we know what's going on. They talk about getting us better training. Plenty of training opportunities out there. Our local association has monthly free training. There's tons of conferences in the area. It's amply flooded. They can't give us training. And then for the health care and the workman's comp and that stuff, our state doesn't have money for that. They're not going to pick us up as state employees. I don't see a fiscal way that would be possible aside to entice people to sign up for that more information on these cards that they like to hand out. And then I feel for these other providers who are only making $2.10 an hour. I personally have 10 kids in my care, and I make $27.50 an hour. Now, if I broke it down by child, yes, it seems like a little bit of money, but I'm not just working with one child. I'm running a business, and I have 10 children in my care at all times. I have a successful business. 7 of those children are in subsidies, and their parents, whom I love to pieces, they're great people, they pay me the difference. If I charge $130 a week, they pay me $5, the $5 difference that the county subsidy, the help, that county has set for families, not for child care providers. It's not our pay. It's a family benefit. I don't see how we can lobby for families to get an increase in benefits when it's their benefit. They're just giving it to us. Like the grocery stores take the EBD cards. They don't get to lobby for the price of cheese at the grocery store with the food stamp card. It's the same in our line. They come, we interview, we hit it off. I say, this is how much extra it will be, and they've been good with it. I have wonderful families.
You're doing just fine.
This is nerve-wracking. So I don't believe that unionization of all 11,000 providers should be in the hands of legislature or the governor. If they want to set up their own union that represents just their membership, and they don't have sole bargaining rights over the entire entire industry, that makes more sense. Like an electrician's union or a painter's union, where providers who do feel it benefit them could join, but providers like myself who can do this successfully on my own, I don't have to be tapped into for fair share. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier will be Ms. Parrish, and we will ask Ms. Holmstead to come to the table. And we're now reaching the two-hour mark, and we've got probably, what, one more testifier after who's at the table. So please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Parrish, and I have been a licensed family child care provider for 7 years. For six of those years, I have been engaged in a battle to remain independent from forced union representation. I was first introduced to the unions when a man walked into my home without knocking while I was busy preparing lunch for six hungry children. He asked me to sign his petition asking the state for health care insurance. He assured me that it was free to sign, told me that my local and state associations were supporting him, and had an argument for every reason that I said no. He became visibly irritated with me as I continued to say no. Having this strange man in my home made me feel scared and uncomfortable. My eye was on the children who were next to me, and my mind was on the lunch boiling over on the stove. I almost signed just to get him to leave. It wasn't until after he left that I had a chance to read the flyer that he left. That was the first time that I saw or heard the word union. He never identified himself as being from a union, never mentioned dues or contract, or that I would be granting the union the right to bargain on my behalf. Today you will hear both union, or today you heard both unions talk about their members and the providers who support them, and it's very important that you all realize that the providers that they are speaking of, the providers that are excited about this union movement, are the providers that sign cards, the same card that I just about signed. These cards are not a true showing of support. My experience with the union organizer spurred me into action. I started speaking with other child care providers and was disturbed to hear that the vast majority signed the cards under the assumption that they were signing up for more information. In the past 6 years, I have spoken with hundreds of child care providers about this issue, and nearly every single one of them is opposed. Make no mistake about it. We already have a strong voice at the Capitol through our associations. We already have countless low-cost training opportunities across the state, including online options. We determine our own pay. We create our own working conditions. We negotiate directly with the parents we serve and provide quality educational child care programs. In Olmsted County, we have a wonderful open relationship with our licensors who can help us to be successful. There is already an appeals process in place if providers feel that they've received a correction order that was unfounded. In spite of what you've heard today by union representatives, we are strong, independent, intelligent business owners, the overwhelming majority of us being women. We do not need a union to speak for us or take care of us any more than any other group of business owners do, especially a union that is formed outside of labor laws, where there are no protections in place for the members, for the union members, where providers would not even have a place to file a petition to decertify or break free from this union. We have no place at the time being to file complaints. We are completely outside of labor laws right now. I would also like to suggest to my fellow providers who feel that they do not have a voice right now to join with the existing associations that have already been working on their behalf, some for over 30 years. You already have a lobbyist working for you, and the only way that they can help you is if you join together with them. I hope and pray that after 6 years, we can find a better way to protect child care providers from the constant threat of forced union representation, because the current laws that are on the books are clearly not protecting us enough if we are still being inundated with mailings and door knockers and robocalls and meetings like this. I don't even feel as a small business owner that we should have to be here tonight. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Our next testifier is Cindy Cunningham.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I've had to revise, add, and remove many things from my house.
So let's see what we end up with. My name is Cindy Cunningham. I'm a licensed child care provider here in St. Paul for 15 years. I feel valued, and I run a successful child care business in my home. I'm testifying against the efforts of unionization for licensed child care providers in Minnesota. I am not against unions. I am, however, against the union process that has and is taking place for a union for licensed child care providers. All unions formed so far in the nation have been formed either by legislative action or by governor executive order. To my knowledge, this is the first time in the nation where we as providers have been able to come to an open table and have some discussion about whether or not unionization is an option or a good thing for providers. My line to many providers has been, we cannot talk about whether or not there should be a union for providers because the choice has been taken out of our hands by elected officials in different areas and was almost taken out of our hands here in Minnesota. I was approached in 2005, 2006 regarding a union for child care providers, and I told the organizers that I was not interested and to go away. They did. I was later told that because I told them to go away, that is why I didn't know anything about anything that was going on with the union. They had respectfully taken my word and so did not inform me of any action that they were proceeding with for the union. I am still not interested for myself or for our industry as a whole. I believe that this situation has blurred the boundaries and roles and responsibilities between the elected officials, labor, and small business owners. I have started my research and speaking out in April of this year. I have had the privilege of joining many of the women you have seen here speaking against unionization. I have put in countless hours and my own money to educate providers on this issue. There have been many providers other than just the one who have benefited directly and indirectly from union income. In Ramsey County, the county has funded 5 providers associated with CCPT to act as mentors within the county. I have done research on that. There's been very little outreach and work on that. I'm concerned that that is exactly how the union will continue to function for that. So there are providers who have spoken tonight that have benefited from that money that are speaking from what I believe is from a paid position. It is not directly through the union. It is funneled through DHS, through the Ramsey County, and through the county commissioners, through them as mentor liaisons. I am an independent small business owner without an employer by choice. I work in a home-based business, not a center or other organization. The only way to organize this is under labor law with an employer, a vote or card check process, none of which is an option without an elected official action. Excuse me. To risk saying it, I have been in 2 public meetings where union organizers have stated openly that the unionization of daycare providers was a done deal, and that because that it was an election agreement between Governor Dayton and the unions, and that this would take place, so it was not worth the discussion. CCAP is a negotiated contract in many, if not all, states which have unionized. We are on the wrong side of the fence. CCAP money is a subsidy program for families. Families apply for the subsidy and then are given the financial support to shop for childcare. This benefit is essential for families attempting to support their children by entering the workforce and educating their children for school readiness. The directions and guidelines that we are given when we accept CCAP families specifically says that it is our responsibility to choose but to charge the difference between what the counties supply us for CCAP rates and what we choose to charge for our own businesses. When a family interviews with myself and is utilizing CCAP dollars, we come to a financial agreement like any other business. If the CCAP rate is less than what my business fees are, the family makes a decision, if they choose to use my services, that they would typically pay the difference, additional money on these rates. My business rate, what I get paid, is not set by CCAP rates. If I only received this rate and it were less than what my business practices, I would then be choosing to be a charity and provide a portion of my services for free, essentially becoming an additional welfare service provider. If the unions are established and effect rate change in which public policy, then we as providers may be charged a fair share due to pay for this change, whether we realize a gain in the rate change or not. Again, elected officials would have partnered with unions to affect public policy on the back of my business. The legislators would also have to fund the CCAP dollars to somehow cover everything. The prospect of the union has been in existence for around 6 years in Minnesota.
The prospect of its reality has come and gone depending on who our elected officials have been. I have been fortunate in the past months to be working with other providers to stop this action. In 2006, with these providers' involvement, Governor Pawlenty stated he would not sign such an order. Governor Dayton likely would have signed an order this year if pressure had not been placed on him by providers, media, and legislators. The unions have also held out to us that health care would be an option, but is questionable under Minnesota statute whether that can even be provided. I do not want to wonder when this possibility might come again. In other states, elected officials have signed what I view as union agreements as recently as yesterday in Connecticut. Here in Minnesota, it almost happened. The vast majority of providers I have talked with specifically over the last 5 months did not even know that this was an option and might happen. With information, providers are becoming empowered and speaking out for their own businesses. We should not have to vote on a union. We should not have to constantly be on guard to protect our businesses from unions and elected officials partnering together. A request for assistance from the legislation, and we're willing to work together to find a way to put this to rest and off of our backs so we can spend our time with children. I do not want an employer. I do not want an elected official to designate who that employer would be, nor do I want elected officials to place us into the position of negotiating public policy for the benefit of the union through fair share dues and dues. I'm a small business owner without that employer, and I want to stay that way. Thank you for this opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. Ms. Homestead.
Hi, thank you. My name is Leilani Homestead, and I've been a licensed child care provider in Minnesota for 12 years, and prior to that, I was a licensed social worker in the state. 6 years ago, I testified at a legislative hearing where testimony was being heard whether child care providers would be preschool teachers. At the time, the state was going to provide a mandatory curriculum that all providers had to use. The idea being that the school districts would get federal money for all these students, but they wouldn't have to pay teachers because the kids would already be in child care and the child care providers would be the teachers. Part of this state curriculum would encompass diversity, specifically religious diversity. As a child care provider, I would have to have tables set up in my home where kids would be encouraged and exposed to putting spells on each other. So a question would come up, would a Christian prayer of salvation be a part of this curriculum also? Also at this legislative hearing, there was a representative from Head Start who shared the vision of the program, and they shared that the goal was to be in the hospital at the birth of a child, handing out booklets to parents on how Head Start thought children should be raised. Today, as it was 6 years ago, this issue is about the rights of parents being taken away. And giving government or a union that is subsidized with government money by their favorite party heads the ability to supersede our parental rights. With this comes the indoctrination of children with set values, morals, and political ideology that is out of step with parental choice. This issue is also about the redistribution of money from our pockets into the union, thus furthering their political agenda. It also price fixes free enterprise industry that has been working well up to this point. If this was about children, the union would stay out and allow parents to choose who cares for the children and how they are guided. There is much evidence showing how unions have hampered our children and their learning with our schools. Why would we think they'd do a better job with our youngest children? Hitler wanted to change the culture of Germany by circumventing parental input. This is the same tactic that is being attempted here. I've had two union reps come to my door attempting to convince me of the benefits a union could give me, such as respect and security. I'm here to tell you today that I do not need, nor do I want, respect from a union. Only the respect of parents and children that entrust me to their care. Your character is what earns you respect, not your occupation or being a membership to a union. How, as a sole proprietor, can a union guarantee my business remains secure and open and active? The answer, I believe, was how I was threatened by these reps that if I don't agree to be a member to the union, my name would be removed from child care listings and I would be out of business soon. This is how they plan to offer security, by blacklisting providers, Would this blacklisting be based only on membership to the union or on the redistribution of numbers of children and not based on the quality of care parents are looking for? Already, it is difficult to terminate bad employees in industries that have unions. I am sitting here today to say that children and families could not afford the poor quality of care that a union would bring. I hope that you all see this issue as what it really is, freedom of choice for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you to the two testifiers. And we have one person who has signed up, a neutral person who would like to come forward, and we would ask, I believe it's Katie Chase. Is that right, Katie?
Yes.
Please come forward, and you may state your name and proceed.
Katie Chase. Mr. Chair and committee members, I'd first of all like to thank all of the passionate providers here today on both sides of this issue. It is a very daunting task to come to the Capitol and testify, especially for providers who can't do it during the daytime. So also, thank you so much for having this an evening session. I'm Katie Chase, Executive Director of Minnesota Licensed Family Child Care Association, also known as MLFCCA. And I'd actually like to clarify that I didn't sign up for this. I was asked to come and do this by your staff today to give you just general information regarding our association work. MLFCCA is Minnesota's state licensed family child care association, founded in 1973. Our membership consists of individual members, local county associations, and local neighborhood group memberships. Our full board of directors consists of statewide representatives from these local family child care associations. We also then are the state affiliate to the National Association for Family Child Care, known as NAFCC. Our mission is to support the highest standard of care for children in Minnesota's diverse licensed family child care homes through education, resources, recognition, and advocacy. We fulfill this mission in many ways. Under education and resources, our largest program is the Child and Adult Care Food Program. This program reimburses providers for meals served and ensures that children are being offered healthy food choices. We monitor compliance with the extensive regulations for this program by visiting the homes at least 3 times a year and monthly through online and paper review of submitted claims. MLFCCA also provides extensive nutrition, sanitation, and health education. Research has shown that children in homes that receive CACFP funds, Child and Adult Care Food Program funds, are not only healthier, but have higher academic achievement than those in child care homes that are not receiving this education. MLFCCA publishes Megaphone, the first statewide licensed family child care professional newsletter in Minnesota. In 1986, we organized the annual Minnesota Child Care Training Project and the first annual licensed family child care professional conference, the Minnesota Week of the Family Child Care Provider Conference and Recognition Banquet. We are the organization that for 25 years has asked and received the proclamation for the Week of the Family Child Care Provider from Minnesota's governors. Our network of local associations selects county providers of the year that are honored at our annual state conference and recognition banquet. In 1997, MLFCCA implemented a now nationally recognized family child care professional mentorship program, which has been adopted by other states. We wrote, revised, and offered the training specific to family child care mentors in Minnesota. This continues today. We provide Minnesota with several professional development credentials, the family child care credential, the family child care mentor credential, and the family child care leadership credential. Criteria for each are outlined in the packets that hopefully your staff handed out to you on the committee. One of the crucial criteria of MLFCCA family child care mentors that sets them apart is the requirement of not only specific education, but at least 5 years' experience as a family child care provider. The Minnesota Department of Human Services has recognized our Family Child Care Mentor Program as an integral part of Parent Aware and Building Quality. Both DHS and NAFCC, National Association of Family Child Care, have recognized the need for our mentors when providers are seeking accreditation from NAFCC, the only national accrediting body for family child care. The ultimate goal of Parent Aware is to improve school readiness for Minnesota children, particularly at-risk children who are entering kindergarten, not yet fully prepared for learning success, and to inform families of the characteristics of quality child care. Child trends, evaluations of our work have shown that providers who were assisted with a MLFCCA credentialed mentor scored higher in Parent Aware than those who were not. MLFCCA wrote and owns the essential elements in family child care training program that incorporates both a training of trainers and in-depth training series plus support for newly licensed child care providers across the state. MLFCCA wrote and owns steps to building an association which nurtures neighborhood groups that wish to become a more formal association. Prior to Parent Aware, Child Trends evaluated the Quince Project, which showed that providers connected to family child care associations made more program improvements than those who were not connected to a family child care association. Both of these series classes, as well as our mentor trainings, are approved on the Minnesota Center for Professional Development. In our advocacy work, MLFCCA regularly testifies for or against legislative bills that affect our mission. We sit on multiple state policy setting committees that help decision makers understand what will work or not work for children and their providers in family child care, including a committee formed to look at finding more consistency in Minnesota Rule 9502 across the state. We are regularly asked to speak with licensors and others on behalf of providers and have been able to help in many miscommunications between families and providers as well. We have members that are pro-union and members who are against the unionization of family child care. Our position is neutral. We want the majority of licensed family providers to be heard. Therefore, we support a vote of the majority of providers, not a majority vote of ballots returned. MLFCCA has felt it is our duty in representing providers to stay neutral and try to present correct information from both sides of the picture so that our members can make the best decision possible. Perhaps the state wants to look at the right-to-work laws so that this issue would be a choice and not compulsory. I have packets available for you, and all of this information and more is on our website, mlfcca.org. Thank you again for this opportunity. I'm happy to try to answer any of your questions.
All right. Thank you very much. Ms. Kern, can you come back up? I know there were some questions that they had for you. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Kern, for coming back. I have a couple of questions I think should be able to answer briefly. I don't want to go on too long. But there are a couple of statements were made in the testimony we've heard, one of which was by one of the testifiers just in the last group that was talking about that there was a deal done as a part of the political process in the last election for supporting Governor Dayton, that there was an agreement that he made with AFSCME or SEIU to bring about the unionization of home daycare providers. Is that true? Have you heard that from any of your union members? Is that something that, was there a bargain? Was there an agreement to do that?
Ms. Kern, before you answer, I want the lady next to you to please introduce herself because I believe you're with SEIU. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am. I'm Denise Welty. I'm with SEIU Kids First. I'm their organizing director, and I'm a provider, retired 27 years out of Olmsted County.
All right. Ms. Kern, you can answer, and I imagine, ma'am, you could follow up with your answer to Senator Hand's question.
My turn?
Yes.
Okay. Done deal. That my understanding is someone testified that they heard that the organizing what was a done deal? I'm sorry. Can you,
Mr. Chairman, and what the testifier said is that in a meeting, one of the organizers for the union said that there had been a deal made in as a part of the support for Governor Dayton, that Governor Dayton, once he was elected, would bring about the unionization. That was the statement that was reported in a meeting that was made by a union organizer. And I just want to ask you if that, in fact, is your understanding, that there was such a deal made, that the union had agreed to support Governor Dayton in return for his support of unionizing home daycare. Is that true? Is that your understanding?
No, that is not, sir.
Okay. All right. Secondly, I wanted to ask about the sheet that we got. It talks about a couple things, having a seat at the table and collective bargaining. We've tried to ask this question. I haven't got a real clear answer, but when you talk about collective bargaining, you're talking about a contract, usually.
Correct.
Who is the contract with that you're anticipating executing?
Ms. Kern.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it is going to be the Department of Human Services. It will be the state of Minnesota. I don't know exactly who would be working with the unions to negotiate that, but that is my understanding. That would be the Department of Human Services.
And so, Mr. Chairman and Ms. Kern, so these are not state employees. They do not have an employee-employer relationship, and yet they're going to enter into a contract and collectively bargain with the Department of Human Services. Is that correct? That's your understanding of what this would be?
That's correct.
I think, secondly, with related to collective bargaining, and there's been discussion and talk about having a vote. Mm-hmm. Now, again, my understanding is under Minnesota law, when you have a collective bargaining put in place, there's a vote taken. If there are 100 people and 51 vote for the union and 49 vote against the union, then all 100 become a part of the union. Would that be the case in this instance as well, that there would be a vote among the 11,000 providers, and if a majority said they wanted the union, then all of them would be included in the collective bargaining arrangement and collective bargaining deal? Is that correct? Is that your understanding of what would happen?
Ms.
Well,
Kern?
You know what? I can't answer that with any certainty because...
Says your collective bargaining. What does that mean?
Oh, collective bargaining. Okay, I don't have that.
It's your handout. Your name is on it.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, can I address that, please?
Absolutely.
In the United States, workers have the right, people have the right to form a union and to organize their union.
Absolutely.
Correct?
Absolutely.
They also, you know, to put these questions on us as staff, that we are not here to answer. We're here to tell the provider story. Excuse me, the provider's story and why they're here, and why it's important for them to organize their union.
And
in the other advocacy groups that talked, they do great. Associations do great work, but they do not have a legal standing in the state of Minnesota.
And Ms. Welty and Mr. Chairman, Ms. Welty, that's what I'm trying to understand. When you talk about a legal standing, on what law is that standing resting, and what does that mean? Because people are here testifying, and given the experience with other collective bargaining groups, what it means is there is a vote, and everyone is compelled to be a member of that bargaining unit, even if they don't wish to. That's what it means in Minnesota to be part of a collective bargaining unit. And this says that you're proposing that we do that with home daycare providers. And we've heard testimony from people saying they don't want that. And the question is very simply, if we do this, will they be compelled to be members of this bargaining unit and be compelled to either pay dues or a fair share? Now, you are representatives of the organization that is putting this material out and asking people to support that effort. And all we're asking is to tell us what that means.
Ms. Right. Welty.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you again. Like I said, in the United States, we have the right to organize and form a union. And that's where we're at right now, is forming our union. And the providers should have a voice, and we should be able to convey what they want, period.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Welty, I agree with you that people in this country have a right to form a union and bargain with employers. But I have not heard anybody say that these are employees of the state or the Department of Human Services. And so we're trying to understand, when you're saying collective bargaining, a seat at the table, a legal seat at the table, who is the employer and who is the contract with? And if there is no employee-employer relationship, how does that contract have any force of law? And to me, these are very fundamental questions. We're trying to understand what this effort is based on and what it's trying to get done.
Right.
And all we're
right
looking for is information answers for that.
Ms. Walty.
Yeah. And Mr. Chair, again, I say providers are here to organize their union because they have that right. And we don't have all the answers you're looking for at this moment.
And Mr. Chairman and Ms. Welty, and we had one of the other testifiers in favor of the union talk about, I think it was Mrs. O'Boyle, I hope I have that right, who says she already belongs to a union. Some, I've forgotten the name of the union. And nobody, I certainly don't object to anyone who says, I want to join an organization and it's called a union. That's fine. What I'm trying to understand is if that means that others who don't wish to would be compelled to be a member of or pay dues to or be subject to agreements made by this group that they don't wish to be a part of. It's not, I think it's a pretty fundamental question about what the intent of this effort is. And I'm a little bit surprised that that can't be answered directly.
Mr. Chairman, again, providers are organizing in this state to get a voice, and they have that right to form their union. The providers will decide on how their union looks and what you know, their union dues will be when we get there.
But to your knowledge, you don't know if people who don't wish to be a part of it would be compelled to be a part of it?
Ms. Welty.
Mr. Chairman, providers will decide on who.
All providers or just the majority of providers?
The majority of providers
will decide. So what you are saying is that if you have a vote and the majority says we want this, then the people who don't want it still have to have it. That's what I take your answer to be. And I hope if that's not correct, you will correct me.
All right.
Again, providers have the right to form their union. We're organizing to make a difference in the state of Minnesota. And
all
they
right.
will make that decision. I'm not here to make that decision for them.
All right. I'm going to start the order here now. Senator Wolf, and then we'll go to Senator Nina. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to all of those that are here to testify today. And I have some comments as well as some questions. First of all, I speak as a union member, and I want to address those of you who are requesting union membership. What I'm hearing is more of a, you keep mentioning you want a voice. And to me, that sounds more like you want lobbying power to represent you and have a voice. Every daycare provider in my district has a voice. They can contact me with their issues. So a union also has the bargaining, which has been brought up. Okay, as a union member, my union collectively bargains for my contract, right, with my employer. Those of you, this question keeps being dodged, and I hear statements from Ms. Thompson like union membership is voluntary. It's a different kind of union. And it's organizing now. And it's the same thing I just heard from the union leaders without answering the question. Personally, I would not join anything if I didn't have the details first. You do not go to a health club and sign up for a membership and then find out how much you're going to pay every month. You do not then find out what your services are. So I would hope that in this process, those of you who are daycare providers, ask those questions, because those of you who have already signed these cards, those of you in purple with the SEIU, yours is a little more vague. Those of you wearing green, this is what you've agreed to. I authorize AFSCME to act as my exclusive representation. What that means is they represent you as an entirety. So if you have a different opinion on something, they represent you as an entirety. They represent you exclusively. You also agreed, I authorize the deduction of dues in the amount set by CCPT/AFSCME from reimbursements and payments issued to me. So you have agreed to pay dues, but you don't know how much because it will be set by the union. Somebody also made the comment, I will have control over the amount of money I pay for dues. Okay? No, you don't. The union will tell you. And the question that keeps being dodged that Senator Hand tried to drive home is the statement, union membership is voluntary. Does that mean, are you talking voluntary as in you then pay fair share? Are you talking voluntary as in a right-to-work entity within the union? Because that needs to be addressed. If I am a member in my union, I pay over $700 a year. If I'm not a member, I pay almost $600 a year. So you're being very vague in what you're willing to tell people membership and non-membership is. It's being designed. It's being developed. I would hope that everyone, whether this comes to vote, however it happens, you ask those questions. And the other issue I have is with the process. The way usually unions work is a group of employees get together. They contact a non-biased entity like BMS, which is not here today, and I agree with Senator Perry. It's really upsetting to me that they're not here. And they sign authorization cards. When they have a high enough percentage, then everyone that is going to be involved is sent a ballot. They also have the power to decertify by a process also. This is not the normal process in which unions are organized. Big difference. You are talking about organizing self-employed private business owners. This is new precedence in this state of Minnesota. And you talk about you're organizing the union now, and it's a different kind of union. What I see are two unions that already exist that are representing you. So are you going to branch from that and create your own true own union, or are you going to be a part of AFSCME and SEIU? Because I don't know why a union would give you a special little piece of the pie that you don't have to pay union dues, but every other union member in every other entity has to. So before you take that vote, however this comes down, I hope you're asking those questions.
Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question is for the two previous testifiers if they want to come back up. But I'll reiterate what the chairman and the senator said. I'm extraordinarily disappointed that we don't have representation here from the governor's office, from the commissioners. This is not the first informational hearing that I've been to, certainly not first informational Senator Hand's been to, when commissioners and departments and the governor just weren't available. I don't know why they would be afraid to present themselves and talk to these bodies. If these are good things that they're wanting to do, then full steam ahead. But let's talk about it. Don't hide. I believe it was Ms. Kern and Ms. Welty, the two previous testifiers that were just at the table, had a question if they're in the room.
Before you ask that, let me just remind you what both of them reiterated a couple of times is that
this is a completely
different
question.
The heads aren't here, and they're, knowledge that they
that's
don't
why
have.
I'm voicing my frustrations, right. Mr. Chairman, because I'm not sure they're going to have an answer. Maybe they will. But I would have liked to have some higher level individuals here to answer some of these questions. But the question I had, it was the same question I asked previously, and then we kind of backed off just to allow for testimony. Did I take my notes correctly? Is your last name Welty? Is that?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I want to make sure I'm addressing them with the proper name. You had mentioned a number of times that providers are exercising their right to organize, and we heard a lot of testimony about why that would be a good thing. But it comes back to my question with the first testifier, that barring legislative action, barring an action by the governor, do they currently have that right? And if so, what is that mechanism?
Ms. Welty?
Mr. Chairman, just so I'm clear on the question, you're asking what right providers have now?
Mr. Chairman, barring any action by the governor, barring any legislative changes by this legislative body here, is there a current mechanism for these providers to form a union?
Ms. Welty?
Mr. Chairman, no.
Senator Nino?
Mr. Chairman, I don't sit on your committee. I didn't serve on that committee, so maybe this is best directed to you. Was there a legislative proposal of this kind in the recent legislative session?
I don't believe so.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, then I will direct my question to either the members or the testifiers at the table. Why not?
Ms. Welty.
Why not any legislation? I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Why not any?
I'll clarify, Mr. Chairman. If there's no current mechanism for the providers to organize, and you need a mechanism to do that, we have a recently completed legislative session. Why was it that Senator Perry, Mr. Chairman's committee, would be where that would go? And he's saying that that legislation does not exist or did not exist. And I'm asking you, as proponents of this, why not?
Ms. Welty.
Mr. Chairman, that's a really good question. We did not have a governor who supports early learning like we have now.
Mr. Chairman, in the most recent legislative session, you did.
I believe what he's asking, Ms. Welty, is why, knowing that we had the session, why wasn't there a bill for lawmaking brought forth during that session?
Right, Mr. Chairman, it's because we've been out there, we've been spending time talking to every provider in the state of Minnesota in SEIU's area to get their input and their issues and to get their support. And that's very valuable, not only to me personally as a former child care provider, but I think in greater Minnesota, there's a lot of providers that don't have a voice here, and a lot of them that would have been here tonight, but for them to have to drive 3 hours would have been too much. I look around the room tonight, and I am impressed by the support of our union providers and how much this means to them. Thank you.
Thank you. And I would think we have another legislative session coming up on the in January, that if it is that important and there is that much support, I would think that you'd be working with to put together a bill to bring forth where you would have great testimony, further testimony, further vetting in a setting just like this next session.
Right.
Further questions or comments of these two? Senator Goodwin.
I can't resist this because I just have a feeling just from the legislation that was introduced last year and not heard in either your committee, Senator Han, or your committee, Senator Perry, that this kind of legislation would have very little chance of getting a hearing in your committee. And if it did, we know the numbers. We're not, naive. We know the numbers of Republicans on those committees, and we know that they vote in a block, and we know that basically that wouldn't have a chance. So I certainly do understand why they don't. The other thing I would like to say is that if we're going to get political about this, which I really think that this committee has done tonight, some of the members of this committee have really gotten very political, governor against the legislature, whatever. I guess my question would be for Chair Han, and I guess I would ask, what was your proposal in the budget, in your Health and Human Service budget? What was your cut for daycare providers in your budget that passed out of here?
Senator Han.
Senator Goodwin, first let me just say that if there is a bill that is brought next session by folks who wish to change the law to facilitate something that currently is not lawful, I will promise you we will have a hearing, and we will let the members of the committee decide what to do with that proposal. But I just want to make it clear that if anybody wishes to bring a bill to address these things that right now, has been pointed out, are not currently lawful under Minnesota law, if they wish to change the law to facilitate something that has been talked about but not very clearly, I will promise that we will have a hearing and we'll have testimony. As with respect to the proposal that we had a budget and we went through a process, and then it was changed and we passed something, and my recollection, and I guess I asked my researcher,
1.7%. 1.7% was the bill, Mr. Chair, a cut to daycare providers?
1.75, sorry.
Okay.
Senator Goodwin.
Then one last comment then, and I think, Senator Senjum, your comments about the daycare providers are wonderful and about how important they are and about that kind of thing, but I think when we show that an occupation that makes this little money that they make for the important and hard work that they do. And we have cuts to their budget and no increases for 10 years or whatever it's been. I think it's kind of it's a little bit untruthful to say that we respect them that much if we would make cuts to their the daycare providers when even in these very difficult budget times.
Thank you. Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that Representative Franzen has been a daycare provider in the past. I may be the only other one at the table here who has been a daycare provider, so that may surprise a number of you. My wife, Lynn, had a daycare business in our home, a group family daycare. We were a licensed daycare center. We were very proud. She was very proud of the services that she provided to those children that grew up in our home. Those children to this day, 10, 15 years later, are still family friends. We've gone to graduations. We've participated in weddings. We've had relationships with those families for many, many years. And I truly applaud each and every one of you for the service that you provide to these children, to these families. This is an important role that you play. And it truly is a service to the community, and it is part of the education process, absolutely. When we talk about the importance of reading by grade 3, you play a role in providing that service, in helping those children have that reading ability. At the same time, this is a business, and I just have a very hard time understanding the relationship between a union effort and a business. If we are going to go down this path, what is to say that auto mechanics, independent business people, shouldn't have the same unionization that Avon providers, that, in fact, newspaper publishers, which I am, shouldn't have that same opportunity to unionize and ask for protection against the state? A lot of what we've heard tonight is testimony regarding fear of the processes that we have as business owners in dealing with the state of Minnesota and with our government. These relationships include these inspections that you have in your home for the quality of the food that you're providing, for the education that you're providing, for all of these types of things. But all of us as business owners, as business leaders, have the same situation. We are fearful when the workers' comp person comes in and inspects us, when the sales tax auditor comes in and inspects our records, when time after time after time government officials come into our businesses, come into our homes, and inspect what we are doing. So I don't know that this is a daycare specific, that this is a home daycare specific situation. I think this is a business situation that we all face when we are in business. But again, I want to applaud you for what you're doing as providers. This is an important service. I just have a question of what is the legality of going forward with this. And I did find one thing that was interesting. In the state of Michigan, they were unionized, are unionized, and their daycare, their dues were withdrawn from the state payments. So you did not have a choice, a membership. Your payments to the union were withdrawn from the state payments that you get from those families. So again, I don't know how much of a voice you actually have in this process. I would encourage you to be very cautious and careful as you move forward with this process. Mr. Chairman.
All right. We're going to start our final comments here, and we'll start with Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just mainly going to comment as being a former daycare provider, I never looked at CCAP as a payment that was for me specifically. It was not income. What came down out of the legislature, I never saw it as now I'm going to get my pay cut. This was a benefit that was provided to parents to help assist them with daycare while they were working. Now, in Douglas County, all counties in Minnesota, the rate that you are reimbursed is quite different. In the metro, you get paid quite a bit more. In rural Minnesota, not so much. But that's not the state's fault. I set my own rates as a daycare provider. Now, a daily rate in Douglas County for a for what I charge for toddler up to school age was the county would reimburse $21.57 a day or $107.56 a week. My daily rate was $23, and if they contracted for 4 or more days, it was $115 a week. Now, as a business owner, I made a decision. Some families came into my home and they were struggling, and I could see that they were struggling. I would make a business choice if I was going to charge them the difference other than what their co-payment was. If I was going to charge the difference from what CCAP would reimburse me to what my daily or my weekly rate was. And because daycare providers have a big heart and we love the children that come in and we love the families, sometimes I would say, Mary, these kids need a safe place to go to. They need loving arms. They need someone that's going to take care of them. And they loved it. My kids want, you know, sometimes they would help me pick out who would be in my home because they wanted some new friends. And so I would suck it up, and I'd never make a complaint. But that was a business decision I made. The families that I would discuss that they found that it was not a hardship, they gladly paid that. And on top of that, in my negotiations, in my contract, I got paid holidays, I got paid sick days, and I also got paid vacation days. I never once felt that I was a victim of discrimination from the state for being a woman owning my own business. We are empowered, and we can do this business because, gosh darn it, women, we can do everything. I mean, now I can carry groceries, all 10 bags of groceries in my hand, plus still carry a kid, I feel. You know, so that's, you know, we just got to remember that the payment, the CCAP, sure, there was a 1.7-something cut to the program. But as business owners, you have the ability to go to the parent and ask them to pay the difference, not the state.
Any further final comments? Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I haven't been tracking this organizing effort particularly or anything, and it's certainly not, as Senator Goodwin mentioned at the beginning, it's certainly not your typical employer-employee relationship. It's a different type of thing. And I know this has all of a sudden come up, and we've had this sudden hearing, and the governor said that he was not going to have make some executive order and was questioning why this happened. I think Senator Hand said he had a news conference. I know he had news conferences on other things, and he may have asked this, but I don't track the governor's news conferences, but I'd be surprised if he actually had a news conference on this issue, since what I heard him saying was he was surprised that you guys scheduled a hearing and was questioning why. What I'd like to say is I think what should be the controversy that bothers me most is the fact that this is, people on both sides of this recognize how valuable what this is. I mean, it's our future leaders. It's the kids who we are trying to raise. And I know a lot of child care providers who are really struggling to pay for health care, try to pay for basic things. And boy, I would say they really do need somebody representing them here. If this is the way to go, I don't know. I don't have all the questions answered. I don't know how this works. I think a lot of us legitimately have questions. But I think we ought to be ashamed at the fact that I think there's a growing amount of people who aren't able to make ends meet, no matter how hard they work, no matter how many hours they work. And I think there are lots of child care providers. One says she's making $27 an hour, and she doesn't have too many expenses. She's doing pretty good. I know a lot of child care providers aren't making anywhere near that. And I think we ought to be a little bit concerned about that, because I don't care if it's 1.75% or 2.5% cut, but we ain't growing it. And there's a lot more need for it. And frankly, I think in Hennepin County, there's a 2-year wait to get on sliding feet child care. I think most of the counties have waiting lists. I think that's what we ought to be talking about, is the fact that we're not addressing those things. We got a lot of people, mostly women, working very hard to try and run these businesses. And I know some are saying, well, I don't want to lose this. The last witness against it was saying how Hitler or something or another, and how, I mean, it was very strong words. And how, boy, we're not going to have any control anymore. And yet I'm hearing most of them say, hey, we're independent business people. We can make these decisions. And whether we have a union representing us in with the state or not, that's another question. But I think our biggest concern ought to be the fact that there are a lot of parents out there, a a lot of child care providers out there who can't make ends meet. And frankly, child care providers, I think, deserve more compensation. And a lot of the parents can't afford that, which means we either say, well, not our problem, which is what we've been saying, or we got to say that in our society, maybe somebody ought to make sure that people are working hard, can make ends meet, and somebody who's working hard to provide good care for our children gets compensated fairly. And I think the state has failed to do that, which is one argument why I think a lot of them are saying we need somebody to represent us there. That's not directly responding to any of this, but I think if there's a controversy here, it ought to be the fact that we have a lot of people working very hard, and they are struggling to put food on the table. They're struggling in many cases to provide basic health care.
Thank you. Further final comments? All right, then. Couple of things. Again, I echo my disappointment. We have had some great testimony here, some very passionate testimony, and I truly appreciate that. And I appreciate all of the folks that showed up on this almost now the final of the third hour. We can tell that there is great concern as we move forward. Two questions I am going to ask counsel very quickly. Two of the questions that I wanted Commissioner Tilson to respond to. The first question, would the organization of home-based child care providers fall under the jurisdiction of the State Bureau of Mediation Services?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, under current law, no. The two statutes that provide jurisdiction for the Bureau of BMS would not apply here. One statute applies to private employer situations, and the other applies to the state and public entities as an employer, which they would not be here.
Thank you. The second question, under what authority would the BMS be able to conduct a secret ballot election for private home-based daycare providers?
There's nothing in statute that would allow that now.
Thank you. And then the final three questions that I had asked Commissioner Tilson to provide for us before he sent an email to my committee administrator stating Governor Dayton has instructed me not to respond to the greeting, the questions posed for an informational hearing. The other three questions are, please estimate the cost your department would incur if authorized to conduct a secret ballot election for unionization of private home-based daycare providers. The second was, assuming organization, would the BMS have authority to enforce dues being withdrawn from the state subsidy payments to private home-based providers that opposed organization? And the third and final question was, has Governor Dayton or his staff contacted the BMS to inquire about the unionization of private home-based daycare providers? If so, what were the parameters of the discussion? Those were the questions that I thought would be beneficial for the committee and the public to hear. With all of the testimony, again, I have wanted to be proactive on this issue rather than to wait for a decision to be made without what I deemed personally enough information. And truly here tonight, even with some of the comments from Senator Marty, I can tell there is a lot to be discussed. A lot. Everything from the way daycare providers have been contacted, some of the comments we've heard, concerns me deeply. So I hope that this information will get to the governor, and maybe he can view the tape on his way to his overseas trip this weekend and take it with him. But I am concerned that there was no representation here from his office. With that, I have said that Senator Hand will have the final comments here tonight. He has been a very quiet co-chair tonight, and I appreciate that, Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Chairman Perry. I had a question for Senate Counsel, and is there authority under Minnesota statute to permit the governor to, through executive order, bring about the unionization of home daycare workers? Can you answer that?
There is nothing in statute that gives the governor specific authority to do that under executive order. So to do that, he would have to rely on constitutionally granted powers, and it's questionable whether that would exist.
And if, and Mr. Chairman, and if he elected to do that anyway, even though there is nothing in statute, what would be the recourse of the legislature in that event if he were to do that? Is that something, I would say that would be an unlawful act.
Yes, it would be a court action to, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that would be, it would require court action to, you would seek a declaration that that was unconstitutional, right. Abuse of power.
Thank you. And Mr. Chairman and members of the public, I appreciate the opportunity to have the hearing. As Chairman Perry said, lots of things have been raised. Lots of questions have been raised. I think there has been some learning here. I am concerned about the vagueness from the part of the organizers on what their intentions are. I find it a little bit hard to believe that in the effort to organize, some very fundamental questions cannot be answered clearly about what is going to happen and how it is to work. I don't know how you go out and organize people when you can't answer some pretty basic questions. And I hope that before we bring this up in the next session, if there's a hearing, that those questions will be answered and will be addressed in whatever legislation is brought. And I guess lastly, I share the chairman's disappointment with the failure of the governor to respond or have his administration be here to respond to some of these questions to understand what his intentions are. It is concerning to me that the governor would contemplate doing this without the legislative participation, without change in law that, to my understanding, is required. So I just would encourage and hope that the advocates of this will do this or seek to do it in a lawful way if they wish to do it at all and bring a bill to the legislature. Thank you.
For those of you in the audience and those that you testified, thank you very much for coming forward. Please stay in contact with your legislators as we move forward. Representatives, thank you for participating. Members, have a good evening. This informational hearing is adjourned. Thank you.